Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis. The show, of course, is the Mary Davis Show. And we're fortunate to have with us this morning on around our table is Betty Jean Grant, the Honorable Legislator. And she is on our live line this morning. And we're talking about something we talked about on TV, which some of you might have seen in Buffalo on Tuesday night or Wednesday night and Saturday or Friday afternoon. I don't know if you did or not, but Betty Jean and Charlie Fisher were my guests on television, and we talked about this subject, which is what is going on with the upping of the, or the lowering, rather, of the hiring quotas for Solar City, the Solar City project. And we talked about it quite extensively. We even touched on a little, just at the top of the hour of the show, when I asked them what they felt about the debates that's going on and those people who are running in there, and especially how well Donald Trump is doing, and also as well as Dr. Carson, which really bothers me then. But right away, we'll get started on what is going on and have Betty Jean bring us up to date on what's going on with the Solar City project. Now, we know we've talked about this. There was a rally for this, and we know that Betty Jean and Charlie Fisher were some of the sponsors, but there were other people involved too, I believe. And so we're going to ask Betty Jean to bring us up to date on what's going on there before we talk about a few other things. Oh, incidentally, Legislator Grant, I saw the first commercial for Mark Poland cars.
Yeah, he has quite a few. I've seen quite a few of them.
You've seen? Well, I saw my first one last week, and I was a bit surprised because I'd only seen the Challenger. I didn't also realize that the Challenger was this sort of go-to person for Chris Collins, who helped Chris Collins come up with the plan to close all those healthcare clinics and the libraries and everything else. The gentleman who was running against Mr.
Well,
Portland
I'm not sure go-to person or not, but I know he was in the legislature when a lot of this initiative was taking shape, and he was there to vote on some of them. So whether he was a big player or just a vote, I'm not sure, but I know he was certain part of that reform coalition of majority that allowed Chris Collins to wreak havoc on the citizens of Erie County.
So much about him. So what's going on now with Solar City?
It's not just Solar City. I don't want people to just think that we're only looking at Solar City. We're looking at every project in the city of Buffalo and the county of Erie that has taxpayer or public money. And, you know, federal laws dictate whether the minority hiring goes and contract compliance come into play when there's federal money or public money. And I know for Solar City, you know, there's $750 million came from the state and to make sure that facility is up and running. And so we do have an investment. We, when I'm saying we, I mean we, the taxpayer and a resident of not only New York State, but of Buffalo and Erie County. We went there because through the investigation of Jim Haney and Charlotte Keith from Channel 2, we found out that the PLA, the Project Labor Agreement that was signed January 7 between L.P. Simonelli, the developer, contract manager, and the building trades union that had been somehow compromised. Now, people say that...
That was this year, right? This was in 2015 when this took the
yeah,
signing
January
took place?
2015. They said that was the original contract between the unions and the building developer. That may be so, but I know that Governor Cuomo, in his executive order, August 2014, had called for an increase of the minority women business goal from 25% up to 30%, 25 and 5, as opposed to 20 and 5. 20 means minority, 5 means women. So he increased it 30%. However, when the city of Buffalo had the land and gave it or sold it to, or what they did, give it to the Empire State Development, State Development Agency, there were some goals in there. 25 and 5. In talking to people, they said that were those goals aspirational. I never heard in my years being on the County Council, the school board, or the legislature that we had aspirational goals.
Mm-hmm.
We had goals that we know that were not laws. We know that goals are good faith. We know goals are something that's arranged between the developer and the person who's granting them that money or that contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a handshake. It's like the gentleman handshake we had long ago. You know, we signed on for the 7% sales tax between Jim Griffin, Mayor Griffin, and County Executive Ed Ratowski on a handshake.
Mm-hmm.
In a handshake, you know, we still got this tax, you know, 40-some years later. But so some things that even though it's not written in writing, with the understanding that you're going to abide by is what we have always governed ourselves in West New York and Buffalo about goals. We did that. L.P. Simonetti did that with the joint school construction. Those were not laws of the 25 and 5. Those were goals. And so, make a long story short, the 25 and 5 was written into the contract. By the time that L.P. Simonetti and the building trades signed it January 15th, the 25% was crossed off, and in place we had put 15%. So they took 10% of the goals that had been wished by, I'll say, the mayor, because he sold the land. And
speak when you're talking about the mayor, but didn't the mayor give his blessings to Solar City's achievement? He said that they had reached their goal, and he was quite happy with it.
Well, he said, you know, according to that contract that they signed January 7th, they had reached a goal.
Mm-hmm.
That goal was 15%. But however, that's not what the goal he had inferred when he sold the land to Empire State Development.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the goal that was inferred when Empire State Development turned it over to Solar City.
Mm-hmm.
And so, make long story short, it's like we got two set of circumstances. One is the goals that the mayor said is aspirational, that we can't make them do 25%. We aspire them to do 25%. That's always been the rule in Buffalo. We aspire them to do 25% on the joint school construction, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
We aspire them to do it. So by we aspiring, and they know what the city wants, and they know that they want to make a good faith effort, they'll make sure they will adhere to that. In this instance, they didn't. They did for L.P. Simonetti and other projects.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if we don't have a movement or a will to enforce and a goal that is not bound by law, then why even bother having goals? If contractors know that and developers know that they cannot are not being held to that and they can get by with anything because we don't have a law, then we will get anything. So I think the mayor, as he did today in the ECIDA meeting this morning, not this morning, but a couple of days ago,
mm-hmm.
he said that we're going to have Carapaladin do the 722 project, which is a school in West Delaware Avenue, and we're going to have aggressive minority compliance. Now, for this project, he used aggressive, but for the Solar City, mm-hmm. he used aspirational. Me, I love aggressive more than like aspirational, and I think.
Well, how do you know that he will do aggressive with Paladino?
Pardon me?
How are you assured that he will do aggressive with Paladino?
Well, because Mr. Paladino knows that there are other city projects that he might want to be involved with. If you don't aspire to the goals, then you might not be able to get favorable approval from ECIDA and another initiative. And I commend Mr. Frank Messiah for raising the issue regarding mm-hmm. some of the things Mr. Paladino said. But because the project was in his son's name and the allegation of using the N-word was not Mr. Paladino, but mm-hmm. a person he was supporting, Ms. Messiah's kind of argument kind of weakened a little bit. But going to what the mayor said, if he can aggressively say that 25% is what Ms. Paladino should be doing, then he could change his aspirational to aggressive, and he can say that 25% is what Solar City should be doing. You know, if Mr. Paladino can aggressively be persuaded to adhere to the goals of 25%, 25 and 5, then certainly that same language should be applied to Solar City and other projects
mm-hmm.
while the state is doing it or local developers such as Paladino is doing it.
Well, you sound when you say other projects, I get the feeling that Solar City is not the only thing on the agenda here.
Oh, no. Well, you know, look at the Buffalo Medical Corridor. They mm-hmm. have goals, aspirational, if we look at the mirror's language. But I'm hoping that the language when we talk about goals will be aggressive, as he said today. I was very proud that Mayor Brown had used the word aggressive. That's what mm-hmm. we need to hear. That's what developer and that's what contract need to hear, that we have a mayor and we have a government who believe that all should have a bite of the apple. And when a city, when you have over 50% of the city population being minority, then you got goals of 25%. Those mm-hmm. goals better be aggressive, not aspirational.
Well, then, you know, it seems to me that was the rally instrumental in getting anything done or anything on the table to be discussed?
I'm sorry?
Was the rally and protests instrumental in getting
Absolutely.
Any of this on the table?
It got us national attention. Mm-hmm. It got us a platform in other parts of the state. We know a group of ministers in New York City who's advocating for the MTA, the Municipal Transit Authority that runs New York City. It got them saying that Buffalo are not happy with the goals that's been reduced, and we're not going to be happy here, Governor Cuomo, if you reduce the goals here.
Yes, but the mayor didn't show up. So apparently, although you say the rally was a success, why wasn't it successful in getting the mayor's participation?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I didn't want to focus on that. It was successful in getting mm-hmm. us the national attention mm-hmm. and the state attention and the collaboration mm-hmm. and support from the outside. People in New York City, the minister, are using our rally mm-hmm. as a vehicle saying that we're going to do the same thing here. Only problem is that they got a united ministerial support vehicle in New York City, mm-hmm. and they're pushing for 30. They're not pushing for 25 and 5. They're pushing for 30% minority MWBE mm-hmm. As general contractors. They don't want the small change of being subcontractor mm-hmm. or being workforce development. That's good. That's a start. That's what Buffalo.
So in that respect, then the rally was and protest was pretty successful. Is what you're saying?
It very successful. It's mm-hmm. successful. A calling attention to the fact that a goal of 25%, which was believed to have been attached to that project, was mm-hmm. no longer enforced because it was reduced without the state knowledge, without the mayor and the common council knowledge, and also without the people's knowledge. Mm-hmm. So by Channel 2 airing those investigative report, mm-hmm. it shed light on something that we didn't know had happened, because mm-hmm. we was understanding that 25% that was attached to the land was sold mm-hmm. was still in force. Had Channel 2 not dug and found out they had been reduced, we never would have known about it. Mm-hmm. And a 10% reduction is almost a 50% reduction in the opportunity for African American and Latinos and other ethnic groups to be able to be part of the Solar City building of the Solar mm-hmm. City facility.
So a lot of hard work went into this, but it seems to me as though a lot of luck went into this too.
And I don't think luck. Well, I think it was we were lucky enough that Channel 2 saw something was not quite right, and it was mm-hmm. looking for something else. And by looking for something else, it came across this. I think mm-hmm. we were lucky in that aspect.
Well, that was pretty good. Something that came out of that was a pretty good result came out of that. And also, I know that Rod Watson wrote a column in the Buffalo News, and he felt that. At first, he said a lot of times these rallies are not spectacular successful, but he thought that the one that you guys did was. He seemed to be quite pleased about it.
You know what? He wrote the article before we had the rally, and I think he was drumming up support, and I'm glad that he did. Mm-hmm. He was saying, in light of all that was happening by minority rights being infringed on and all the ills that we have of people not being inclusive mm-hmm. and all the incidents like Ferguson and other parts of the country, that mm-hmm. people in Buffalo have been motivated to, you know, take control of their actions, not sit back and complain, but do something about it. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement mm-hmm. was also in the back of people's minds, saying that, you know what, if they can rally for them being excluded in Ferguson, Missouri, certainly Buffalo can rally about them, mm-hmm. the African American and Latinos, and other minority groups in Buffalo being excluded. So, yes, I think that Mr. Watson's article moved us one step further to having a very successful rally. Mm-hmm. So people realize now that we sit back and complain, do nothing but complain, mm-hmm. nothing's going to change.
Well, you know, I think Rod Watson has been pretty good on trying to get behind movements in the community. He is really, you know, and I do read, I don't particularly like the editorial page of the news, but I do like Rod Watts. I think he really is on the ball when it comes to a lot of community issues.
Yes, he is.
You know, and that's to be commended. For those of you just joining us this morning, my guest is the Honorable Betty Jean Grant, and she represents the 2nd District in the Erie County Legislature. She also is a Democrat, and she is running for re-election, which the only person that has to vote is herself. So that's a good thing for Betty Jean. So that's pretty good for her. And she also is the minority leader of the Erie County Legislature and has an office that many people say is open to everybody. In fact, although she represents the 2nd District and in Buffalo, which doesn't even include, and I'm going to say the Fruit Belt, but she has also been instrumental in helping them in their struggle with gentrification and also with encroachment on different people, particularly in the St. John Towers or St. John Church acquisition of a piece of land there with houses on, which could have affected 247 families, I think.
Yeah, McCarley Gardens.
McCarley Gardens, yeah. And so this is something, and I remember going to a meeting with the legislator, and she showed up and people said, "You don't even represent this district that you came out to help us." And there was a lot of applause for that.
Yes.
So this is good. And I also want to take this time to say hello to St. Philip's. That's my church. They often listen to the morning broadcast. I just want to let them know that I know you're listening and I thank you for doing that. Now, Betty Jean, back to you. You know, I still can't get over this. And why do you think so? And I'm not asking you to be partisan or vindictive anyway. But why is there so little, it seems to me, attention paid to these matters by other members, particularly members of the city council, where all these things are taking place in the city of Buffalo? What do you think is behind this? It's just, we're too busy with other things?
I can only speak for myself, and I know that, I'm behind this issue of, and East Soto City, that's not even my legislative district either, but the fact that they have reduced the minority hiring goal, which a large part of my district are made up of women and minorities.
But of course, I think that you have a sort of a kinship with people who are working,
right,
and people who are working people and people of color and women's issues. And I think that's just kind of like a constituency for you that probably not only is just in your district, but all over the city of Buffalo. And even I understand that people who live out in the suburbs are calling your office looking for help.
Yeah, because they know that I won't shy away from an issue. Either I'm going to help you, tell you where you go to get help, or tell you that you can't be helped. I'm not going to have you hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we spent time like this morning helping, a lady in the Madison District who is getting her water shut off because she's behind. We're working with the Madison District Council office to see if we can find some way of letting her make some arrangement. Now, the Madison District that she lives in, they're not part of my legislative district, but when you look at people and they call you, they must have some kind of faith.
Well, people hear about, Betty Jean Grant or Legislator Grant will help you.
Or try. Yeah.
And that's a good reputation to have. That's probably stood you in good stead over the years.
It has.
That you have that type of reputation. And again, that's a good thing. But some of these other issues that we have around in Buffalo, particularly around hiring, and you mentioned the health corridor.
The medical corridor.
Medical corridor, yeah. That seems to be something else that people are trying to sit up and take notice to.
Yeah, and we get a lot of complaints there, Mary, because people say they drive by, they don't see the numbers. And from my understanding, which we got to get a better handle.
Have you driven by there? I have not, I'll admit.
I've driven by, and I see very few minorities. When you look at Native American or Italians or... Not Italian, sorry, Native American or African American or Latinos, I see very little. I like to get the numbers. I like to know how they're compiling their workforce. If you are counting the janitor as part of workforce, the receptionist, we don't see them out there, but maybe they are working. So there needs to be a clear picture of workforce involvement. Also, what they're doing, too, which is kind of misleading, is they're using man hours as opposed to actual live bodies.
Can you explain that to our listeners so that they know what you're talking about?
Man hours is the number hour work on a project. So
the actual hours, like 9 to 5, 8 to 4?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So if you have if you're doing man hours, not person, you will have, just say a person's working at Soul City for 4 hours, and then he leaves there and he goes to the medical corridor for 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes to another place and works maybe 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's 9 hours. And you would think, if you look at the record, without knowing that one person actually compiled all those numbers, you would think there are 3 employees as opposed to one.
So I want our listeners to understand exactly what you're talking about.
So that's why it's misleading, because you might have the hours, and you might have 3 sites. You might have 4 to 4 hours, and you might have all 3 sites, and you assume that 3 people work at each individual site,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily so. You have one person, so therefore your hours are there, but your actual person working, which is where we lose out, is not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person may put overtime.
So those are site hours as opposed to man hours?
We want actual body, number of workers counted,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to number of hours counted.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you count hours, it's misleading, because you can have one person
doing those hours.
And you mm-hmm. would think that if you look at those hours, it's 3 or 4 people working.
So what we want to do is track, say this is John Brown, and you want to be able to say, John Brown worked at site A for 4 hours, John
right.
Brown worked at site B for 3 hours, and John Brown worked at site C for 2 hours. That's yes. one John Brown, and he's the one that's accumulated those hours.
Right, but if you look at minority workforce and you look at 3 sites being utilized,
mm-hmm.
you look at hours being worked, you assume that 3 different people
mm-hmm.
are working 3 different sites.
And that's been a problem. How long has that been a problem?
Instead of 3 people working from this community,
mm-hmm.
in jobs, you have one person working in this community in a job,
mm-hmm.
in multiple jobs.
And that's
why it's misleading. And
right.
that's why we want to get short, because we have, they have the hours in place, but not the actual bodies that would tell 25% minority participation. Minority
mm-hmm.
participation should be on bodies, not on hours.
Mm-hmm. I see. And that's how they've been sort of getting over?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find this out? Did you get access to the books?
No, we talked to people who actually work on 3 or 4 different places. And we
mm-hmm.
have people who have worked for 2 weeks and laid off for 2 weeks. And they go back for 2 weeks. And still, you think there's continuous employment. So
mm-hmm.
by talking to the workers,
mm-hmm.
You know, we were able to...
You were able to document this stuff?
Absolutely. But mm-hmm. we need to do is find out who is contract compliance officer for Soul City and the Medical Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
If the state is not monitoring and the county is not and the city is not, then who's doing the monitoring?
Mm-hmm.
Who's actually ascertaining,
mm-hmm.
certifying those numbers as being correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is the developer monitoring himself? And if it is, it's like the fox guarding the hen house, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's got a hen house against himself. So we're asking for an independent monitor to be assigned to these projects, and also asking for the numbers, the
mm-hmm.
actual name of minority business that's working, the name and address of company, the name, mm-hmm. address of owner, and the name, address of the workforce.
Well, you know, it would seem to me,
if you have a minority company and 100% of your workers are not minority, then I don't consider you a minority company.
Mm-hmm.
I consider you a front.
A front. You know, it would seem to me as though it would be the point of the city, the state, or the federal government, or the county, that when all people are given a fair shot, it's just better for the entire community.
It is, and that's a no-brainer. That's why it's hard for me. See why everyone's not pushing for an aggressive minority hiring goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was very glad to hear Mayor Brown said aggressive when he talked about Palladino's project.
Mm-hmm.
I like to hear him say again aggressively talking about Solar City,
mm-hmm.
hiring goals. And I certainly want to hear him say in future projects that they are asked for an aggressive 25 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Not to settle for 15 and 5, but to go for the highest 25 and 5.
Mm-hmm. That would seem to be the best option. I wonder why that's not going on. Are there any plans with you? Are you representing a certain part of a certain group? Are you representing the Erie County Legislature, or are you simply
representing
Legislator Betty Jean Grant?
I'm representing me as elected official who
mm-hmm.
has,
is interested, has a concern.
A project that may need my expertise or my mm-hmm. advocacy. I'm working as a founder of We Are Women Warriors, as a group who deal with community issues that might fall outside of the legislature. As you know, the legislature is controlled by Republicans, and the legislators who are there, many of them are conservative Democrats. And so it's kind of hard to get
anything done or get anything passed.
Particularly those on the east side passed. So a lot of things I have to do has to be outside of the a lot of things have to be outside of the legislature because I don't have to vote within a legislature to get something approved. And if I were to put this to a vote, a solar city, you know, being a minority, being unrepresentative on that project, I probably get anything, wouldn't get anything passed from that legislature. So a lot of stuff I do in the community with community activists because that's the way attention can be focused on it and resolution can be had.
You know, this is really something because it, I'm thinking if you talk about a legislature who has a normal work day, say, of 8 hours, yours probably can stretch into 12 or 13.
Well, I'd be in my office by 1 o'clock every morning, you know, just, you know, answering phone calls or trying to see what happened when I was downtown, you know, legislative duties and making sure that the office runs smoothly and people's concerns are met. I was here Sunday, and a lady called me on Sunday expecting to leave a message. She was very pleasantly surprised I was here to answer the phone.
and that's on a Sunday. And I know that you attend church pretty regularly. So that had to be something. And you also, too, quiet as it's kept, you help your daughter out a lot because your daughter has been ill and has two children.
Yes, yes. I do a lot of babysitting for her and taking the kids to school and a lot of washing. She has sickle cell disease. And you know, she's a mom who, you know, had children late in life, but she's taking care of them, and I'm making it a little bit easier for her and her husband.
This is good. So it seems to me as though you probably come to work in your pajamas and go back home in the same outfit.
No, I truth be told, I get 7 hours of sleep a night. People, I'm not here all the time. If I go to bed at 2, I don't get up to 10. So if I go to bed at 12, I get up at 8. But I do make time for myself. I make time for my husband. He would go to the movies and things, go to dinner. But because I'm having so much fun doing my work, people think I'm having fun and not working.
Well, you have quite a reputation for being a hard worker.
Yeah, because I enjoy doing what I do. I enjoy helping people. And I like to have resolution. I don't like to leave people hanging. And that's why I'm trying to help this lady in Maston to keep her water on because I know she's got some health issues. She needs water for her therapy, and so we're going to make sure we help her.
You know, this is what a lot of people say. And Maston is not even your, not only your legislative district, it's not, it's in the city. It's not even close to where you live.
Well, it's not too far because they changed Maston. The fact is, Maston really abuts the street next to me when they did the reapportionment in 2010. So Maston District technically starts one street over from me. But this lady who I'm talking to, she lives in another legislative district. It's not my legislative district, but it's not too far that I cannot help her and refer her to the Maston District Council member.
Yeah.
Well,
who is Maston District Council member?
Ulysses Wingo.
And he is relatively new, I think.
Yeah, he came on about a month ago.
That was before. That was, what's his?
Damone Smith.
Damone Smith, yeah, that was his district before. And I don't, how did he get in? Because I hadn't really heard of Mr. Wingo. He was really Johnny come lately on the scene.
Who?
Mr. Wingo.
Well, in fact, I saw him Wednesday.
I mean, he hadn't been around like that people could know what he's been active in the community.
Yeah, but, you know, he's in the seat now. He's in for 4 years. And I saw him at the Delavan Grotto, and I have lunch there every day for lunch. I'm a senior citizen now, so I can, you know, get some of that credit back from working so hard. I have lunch there with a bunch of seniors, including Stephen Doyle and a group of guys from McDonald's, and we were there, and I saw Mr. Wingo there today. I mean, not today, but Wednesday he was here. So it was nice.
It was nice. Yeah, I know. It's a nice place because, yeah, you invited me to come down here, and I certainly went down and enjoyed myself.
Yes, absolutely.
It was very nice. There was a danger that maybe losing that subsidy because they didn't have enough participation.
Well, yeah,
I hope that's settled now.
You know, the county subsidized 15 meals per day. It means that first 15, the county guarantee that, you know, individuals can eat if they don't have the money. And so the county makes sure 15 is there. At one time, we had probably getting 15. We had maybe 3, 4, or 5.
Mm-hmm.
But with the, you know, with me being there and me talking about it on Facebook and mm-hmm. other people coming and the crew from McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
East Delavan and Grider, they have been really great coming there every day for lunch.
Cause
very nutritious. The food's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I give Erie County plug for that. The food's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes hot. And then we have another group from the Catalanian
mm-hmm.
Center, I think it is on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group there of seniors and other people who might be developmentally delayed.
Mm-hmm.
They come there, too, and they're there every day. So it's a great mix of young and old, different ethnic race group. Most of the people, majority
mm-hmm.
of the people from the center that comes there every day, they are European-American.
Mm-hmm.
And so the McDonald's crew, as you know, are based African-American retired men.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a mix of young, old, in between, and we have a mix of male, females, and really black and white. So it's a great,
mm-hmm.
great way, the way City Buffalo should be,
mm-hmm.
the community center should be, and everybody's supportive.
Mm-hmm.
The individual there had a dinner, lunch and dinner dance last Friday,
mm-hmm.
and they had people coming in from all over Erie County.
Oh, my goodness, that had to be great. Yes. I'm glad that program was saved because it's really needed.
Yes, absolutely. I want to thank County Executive Mark Poloncarz for mm-hmm. Signing off on a big screen
mm-hmm.
TV for the seniors,
mm-hmm.
as well as Mr. Tim Hoax, our former legislator,
mm-hmm.
for working with Randy Hoax, who's Commissioner of Senior Services,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that seniors stay fit lunch, nutrition,
mm-hmm.
nutritional lunch program is still there, it's still operational. So, you know, with them, their help, we was able to build it up, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's there to stay now, Mary.
Very good. I'm happy to hear that because that's something that's needed. You're just amazed how many people don't need free services. And for those of you just joining us this morning, my guest around the table, she's on the live line, is the Honorable Betty Jean Grant. She is the Erie County Legislature. She is a Democrat. Her district is the second district. She is also minority leader of the Erie County Legislature, and she is running for re-election. She's running unopposed, so the only vote that she needs to get out there is her own. And I want to tell you about another service that we had here. I'm not sure if the legislator knows about this or not, but it's taking place in the Buffalo City Schools. Buffalo Public School students, parents, and guardians will be able to take advantage of free legal advice from lawyers at any one of 5 Say Yes legal clinics located within Buffalo Public School buildings. Legal advice is available for non-criminal matters, including but not limited to adoption, bankruptcy, child custody, child support, divorce, eviction, foreclosure, government benefits, housing, immigration, and income tax. Legal advice will not be offered for criminal matters. All clinics are walk-in only on a first-come, first-served basis, and clinics are for brief counsel and advice to be considered for more in-depth services. Clients must meet financial eligibility requirements. And here are the ones that where these clinics are being held. They're held on Mondays and at the Community School of Academic Excellence at 750 West Avenue in Buffalo. A Spanish translation, a translator is available. On Tuesdays, it's at South Park High School, 150 Southside Parkway, Buffalo, and that's held from 3:30 to 5:30, as well as the one at the Community School of Academic Excellence is from 3:30 to 5:30. On Wednesday, it's the Adult Education Center, 160 Edward Street, and that's held from 12 to 2. And on Thursdays, it's at East High School at 820 Northampton Street in Buffalo, and that's held from 3:30 to 5:30. Legislator Grant, did you know about that?
No, I did not. I'm very impressed.
Yes, I was kind of surprised at it, too, and thought that's some information I would like to get out to people because I feel that there may be a lot of people who might could use this particular service.
Well, absolutely.
You know, as I said before, it's not for criminal matters, but if you got a myriad of all these other situations going for you, that could be something that you might be very interested in.
Absolutely. Who's sponsoring that, Mary?
Well, it seems that I'm trying to see if it tells me something. It just basically says, say yes to Education Buffalo. Now, that might be them. It
okay,
says
maybe
for,
but the Bar Association might have some might
say, well, it says for more information, please visit www.sayyesbuffalo.org or call the Volunteer Lawyers Project. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it probably is.
Volunteer Lawyers Project, Say Yes Legal Clinic information, and their number is 716-828-8491. I can repeat that for you. Their number is 828-8491, and they're the Volunteer Lawyers Project's Say Yes Legal Clinic information. So that comes in handy, I would imagine, for a lot of folks who could use that particular service.
Absolutely.
So I was kind of I didn't know about this at all, and I was really, I said, oh my goodness, this is something
now,
useful.
Now, Mary, this is for the parents of those students who are in Buffalo Public Schools, or can anybody call?
Anybody can come. It says Buffalo Public School students, also parents and guardians, will be able to take advantage of free legal advice from lawyers at any one of five Say Yes Legal Clinics. So I imagine that should cover a large range of people.
Yeah, I think so. If they got students in the Buffalo Public,
Public schools, you know, and that should cover a lot of folks.
That's great.
So I would imagine that that should be useful information for a lot of people. Because I can imagine with the number of people in public schools, and when you figure in the students and their parents and guardians as well, that's going to cover a lot of people.
Yes, it does.
So that might be of some interesting information. I'd like to know what else that you could be involved in. I suppose one of my pet peeves that I'm always going on about it is, I look at Buffalo as an entire community, and everyone who gets a vote out of this community, out of community in Buffalo, and there is a large African-American vote that comes out of Buffalo. There's also a large, I think it's probably larger than any other minority vote that comes out of here. But yet not only minority representatives in the Common Council, but also people who are non-African-American get votes out of the community. And it seemed to me as though they should all have an interest in seeing what is going on in this community, since it is the base for many of these politicians. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts may be on that.
My thoughts is that I think there should be more community engagement. Also, there should be more voter education. I was talking to somebody, Ms. Messiah, today, and he said that someone had told him that we're going to register everybody to vote, but we're going to tell them don't register for a party.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, well, if you do that, that you have denied that individual or those individuals a chance to vote in a primary.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Mary, the government that's best for you and to do most for you, that's the government that's closest to you.
That's right.
And that includes your mayor, your council member, your legislator, your state representative.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are in Buffalo, which is almost 95% Democratic city, and you have a large number of people not being able to vote in the Democratic primary because they have not registered for a party, their right to choose their leader has been compromised because they got other people voting in the primary. They can't vote to November, so they're only voting for in November the choice of other people who voted in the primary. So I tell people I worry about the presidential election. I am concerned about that, but my biggest concern is we have an effective mayor, a competent county legislator, council member who are empathetic and who are sympathetic and who are truly represented, and county legislator who are accountable to their constituents. It's good to have a good president, but most of the policies are going to directly impact the lives of people, and an economic or social or criminal nature comes from either city, county, or state government. So I'd say your biggest job is when you register to choose a party. I'm not telling you what party to choose, but if you don't choose a party, then you sit down and you sit the primary out as other people choose your representative for you.
Yes, and they're finding that out, I think, in a lot of cases. I think one thing where we saw low primary turnout was really unfortunate was in the school board election.
Oh, yes.
I tell you, Betty Jean, I feel that school board elections should be held when there are major elections, like for the
Mary, then we look at South Buffalo. We look at when Carl Paladino ran almost 3 years ago when he won that election. 3 years this year, the next year, 2016. He got 24% of the vote. You think about the last election, the primary,
mm-hmm.
where in certain parts of the suburbs, they were voting 10 to 13%.
Mm-hmm.
In certain part of Buffalo, they were voting 11 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So that school board election for South Buffalo was probably more successful than a primary, a Democratic primary, because people had an interest. They wanted Ms. Palladino in,
mm-hmm.
and he came out and he voted as such.
Mm-hmm.
He won, I think, over 2,400 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet instead you have David Franzik, who ran and won the Fillmore district with less than 1,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
This is for a four-year council member job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the election, it's the participation of people and their interest in the election. And if they're out here complaining about not finding a job, not getting training, and complaining mm-hmm. about minority hiring goals, but they're not registered to vote and they have not voted, or they are registered and can't, and didn't vote, then they have no right to complain.
Well, no, they don't. But I still think there'd be much better turnout if school board elections and these other maybe local were held at the same time that you're voting for major elections like the county exec or the mayor, or if you're voting for the president or the
Absolutely.
Governor. There'd be a much, much bigger turnout.
It absolutely will be a much bigger turnout.
And probably different results.
But in order to do that, because school board elects are nonpartisan,
mm-hmm.
and do they vote in the Democratic primary? Do they vote in the Republican primary? Or do they vote in the general? Now, to vote in the general, it means they have to be the nominee of a particular party.
Mm-hmm.
And so if three people want to run for a particular party, the Democratic primary generally eliminate the two of them, and one would go forward for the general election.
Mm-hmm.
But if school board members want to run, they almost have to be more partisan because you have to have them run in Democratic or Republican or a political primary.
But yeah, Betty Jean, I vote in every election, and I voted in there for judges or different positions. And they say vote for any four, vote for
right.
any two, vote for any three. So you can do that in the same school board elections.
Well, if you vote for any three, they are still Democratic Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could do that. But don't forget the judges run in primary.
Mm-hmm.
If judges want to run, a judge can run on, you know, they solicit the Republican Democratic line, and they do that. They run in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
When there's only one candidate, there's a primary, like Jahar Pridgen.
Mm-hmm.
She was not in the primary because there was only one person running. But had it been two persons interested in the judgeship for city court judge, she would have to run in a Democratic or a Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
So, in order for the school board to be in the Democratic primary, they had to be put forth by the Democratic or Republican political party. So, in essence, that's one of the biggest complaints they have had was that it would be more partisan than it should be. That, you know, they represent all of Buffalo. And so the election should be less political and more about...
Well, that's not... And I think they know darn good well that if they have it like that, they're not going to get big turnouts. That's going to make it pretty hard. And people who not only control the budget the size of the Buffalo School Board, but the faith that you have in this city, which is really segregated city, and you've got 90% of children in there who are either African-American or other minority children... That there has to be a different way to do that so that there's a greater participation.
Well, there is, and I think the biggest thing has happened for that, and that's why you see on Genesee and Moselle, you see people not African American, Latino,
mm-hmm.
down those streets, is that the biggest carrot that this area has had has been the Say Yes Buffalo program.
Mm-hmm.
Because with that, if a child's in Buffalo public schools, then they can have the free tuition in college. And
mm-hmm.
right now, it only covers, I think, Buffalo public schools,
mm-hmm.
and so therefore people have moved back to Buffalo. Those who have three or four children,
mm-hmm.
who might want to go to college in later years, they see a great opportunity that they can make an investment in their children's future by moving to Buffalo and taking advantage, if their children do well in school,
mm-hmm.
of this free college education. That has been the greatest incentive of people moving back to Buffalo in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that probably is, particularly people with children still in school.
Also, incentive for our children, our youth, who when I say ours, I mean African-American youth,
mm-hmm.
to stay in school and to do well because they, too, can have the same opportunity. But somehow we have a lot too many children and parents who don't see the benefit of making sure that children get that education where they can go to school for free.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have more parents become aware of what is out there for their children and what the child needs to do, and that mm-hmm. stay in school, good grades, and they automatically would qualify for that scholarship.
How long has the Say Yes program been around?
I think it's 3 years, no more than 3 years.
That's not a very long time, but you seem to think they've done a lot of good things.
They've done a whole lot. They have done absolutely wonderful. I know people who are Ms. Eva Doyle's grandchildren, two of them mm-hmm. are in school now, and they're benefiting from the Say Yes program.
That is good to know.
One goes to Madai College, and the other one goes to Bryan Stratton, and they have done very well.
Had
not been for the Say Yes program, their mother's single mom. They probably would not be in college right now. They're probably working at they're working at fast food, but they're working for supplemental pay. It's not going to be a future for them. They probably been relegated to working a substandard job because of this opportunity that presented itself, and them wisely choosing to do well in school. They're now going to college free of charge.
Now, that's really something big.
That's the best thing to happen in Buffalo.
In a while.
In addition to the billions from Buffalo in a long time. Good for us to say, yeah, it came without the learning curves or the kinks, but this $1 billion came without a plan and without an initiative that include all of Buffalo. So that's the difference. One came with the well thought out, prepared, planned for, and the other one just came and we're playing catch up.
Well, that's good. You know, Mr. Rodriguez ran in the mayoral race last time. I haven't heard anything from him since. I know he was pretty antagonistic in the school board election. Have you heard anything from the young man?
We're on Facebook. We're Facebook friends. He likes a lot of things I do, and I don't know what he's doing, you know, politically or what he's doing job wise. But we're Facebook friends, so. I see his post, and he see my post, and we like each other's posts. Other than that, I don't know anything else.
Other than that. Well, just to let our audience out here know a few other things that's going on in Buffalo. I'm a big supporter of the cultural scene in Buffalo. I like theater. And so I particularly go quite a bit to that. And coming up in the Paul Robeson Theater from November 13th to December 6th, it's a high-energy tribute to the heydays at the Cotton Club in Savoy Ballroom. Puts you right there behind the scenes in one of these elite Harlem nightclubs of the 1930s and 40s. To experience the bubbling brown sugar review. And that was the 1920s through the 1940s was the heyday of the Harlem Renaissance. Was that right? And that was when really things were going on there. You know, when you can read about that and you think about a lot of creativity went on there, and a lot of famous authors and playwrights and poets came out of that particular
you're
time.
Right. I support Paul Robeson Theater as much as I can. I know that how it got over. I think it's currently playing now.
No, it's over. It was over October the 11th because I went to opening night.
I saw it a couple months ago. And that was good because it did a tribute to our very famous local gospel recording artist.
Yes, indeed they did. They were there. There were so many. In fact, it was a long show.
Yes.
It was directed and produced by Paulette Harris. And it was a long show, but I was stomping my feet in there with everybody
else. Yes. In fact, if I was there, the actual people they were portraying was there in the audience. I mean, they're on stage. You know, you had Bessie Patterson, you had Miss Swain, Elvis Swain. And you had the other lady, I forgot her name, and the gentleman. They were there in the audience. As people were portraying them, they did a wonderful job. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. It was really good. Do you go to opening a curtain up?
No, I haven't gone there in a long time.
Okay, I went to Curtain Up and saw it, and I thought it was quite inspiring. It was gospel music like I hadn't heard in a long time. You know, and I thought that was, gospel music is really pretty popular.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
There was another review here with, I think it was Ernest Pugh.
Yeah, Ernest Pugh at this past Sunday at Elam.
Elam, yeah. I don't know the nomination for that church, but when I sat in there, the altar or in the didn't seem to be like most Protestant sanctuaries.
I think it's in denominational.
Is that it?
I know that, you know, Bishop Bryan, we came from Calvary Baptist Church, but when he did Elam Fellowship, I'm not clear what the denomination is. It might be Protestant, but not necessarily Baptist. I think what it is. Probably Protestant.
Yeah, because I have noticed that their sanctuary doesn't seem to be like any type of Catholic or Protestant sort of sanctuary looked, you know, where you have kind of like a central altar, you know, and a place where the choir sits or sings, or a rows of seats where the minister sits along with the associate or assistant minister sit. It just seemed different. It was very open and airy.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I thought it was very beautiful.
The design of church, you know, as opposed to anything with the religious connotation, maybe just simply design of church.
Well, it's a huge place.
It is.
You know, I had no idea what their membership was, but the auditorium was vast. I'm pretty sure 500 people could sit in that place pretty easy.
You mean the sanctuary?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, at least 500.
And it was well attended. I know that Carla Thomas and Debbie Allen, I think, sort of put it together. And the people there, I didn't really realize that Debbie Allen was as big as she was in high school, getting high school groups together, because most of the performers there were young people out of high schools.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really something.
Well, yeah, she does the award ceremony. I forgot the name of her group, but she does it every year, she and Carla.
Mm-hmm.
So she has many years of promoting and producing and putting on those kind of events. So
yeah, I was really kind of surprised. I understood maybe it was their first venture into the gospel scene, but I was amazed. Those young people, they were really something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting. So it was kind of like new for me that was going on. Are you taking part in any of those things at all?
Any what?
Any of those events that they're putting on, gospel shows?
Well, you know, plus my limitation with my leg, which I'll be going for surgery.
That is right. You're going to be going into surgery soon.
I'll be replaced October 26th in a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll be kind of limiting myself to that. The fact is, I was in a parking lot of Elam last Sunday when they had the show, and I got a call that I had a family emergency, so I had to wind up leaving. And
goodness.
Car, I had to leave.
Uh-huh.
So, but I saw the cars there, and I knew it was very well attended.
It was indeed. It was something else. I'm sorry to hear about that. So your surgery is going to take place on the 26th?
Yes.
And how long will you be out? People are going to miss you.
2 days in a hospital, 7 days in rehab, at a rehab facility, and then I'll be running my mouth the whole time. Probably day after surgery, I'll be up and running mouthwise.
Up and running. But I'm sure you're going to be laid up for a while. What, maybe a couple months? That's the time you use to rest.
That's the time I use to get on the phone, do all my work by phone.
Do all your work by phone?
Yes.
Well, people are going to really miss you a lot.
Yeah, but considering I've been on this cane for about almost a year, it has not limited me in being visible or being productive or even being effective.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I commend all those with any type of disability, because you still do well, and many people do in spite of. So, you know, the cane just slowed me down a couple seconds, and that's about it.
Well, let me tell you, I'm on the cane myself here with my bursitis, so you and I are both hobbling. I'm getting kind of used to it, though. I'm getting kind of used to it, though, so, you know. You can still move around and get around and do what you got to do.
You still can be productive. You still can be effective. That's why I say, you know, we should never limit people based on their disability, because sometimes we stereotype and we wind up losing valuable resources and information for those who we just assume might not have it.
That's so true. For those of you, again, who just joining us this morning, my guest has been the Honorable Betty Jean Grant, and she is a Democrat. She is also an Erie County legislator. Her district is the second district in Erie County, and she is also the minority leader of the Erie County legislature. And she is running for election unopposed, so she knows if she only goes there and votes for herself, she's going to have a majority of the votes and will retain her seat. And that's probably so. Has that ever happened to you before?
No, never. Not ever.
Not ever. Mike, what do you do with yourself? You're not going from door to door or whatever else campaigning.
Wait, I miss that. I miss going door to door because that's, you know, but right now the blessing is that, you know, I'm not 100% walk-wise. So, you know, God has a plan for everything else. Maybe God knew that I'd be on his cane and he says, well, let me give a little bit of rest.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go door to door. It'll be difficult for me with this cane, actually going door to door.
So that was a blessing for you. Yes. Don't have to. Are you expecting, though, to get a good number of people voting for you, even though you're running unopposed?
You know, I just hope people will come out and vote for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a very lackluster election. We have the county executive race. We have family court. And we have a competition maybe in few of the councilmatic district, one or two. There's a race outside of Buffalo that's competitive with legislators who are being challenged, you know, my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
But in City of Buffalo, there's only on the agenda the family court race and the county legislator race.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's I'm based on, you know, about a week and a couple of days from an election, I just don't see the enthusiasm out there from anybody.
From anybody, yeah.
You know, just think about if this was a presidential election or, you know, if a council member had some opponents.
Yeah,
the general is better than the primary.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year the primary is going to be better attended than the general election because there's nobody, there's a push, there's very few signs out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a movement from somebody's part to really shut down the city of Buffalo.
That's something to kind of think about, you know, when you're wondering about this. So we're going to see what's going on there. Because that's, yeah, you. I haven't seen a lot of people even, I haven't seen a lot of Democrats out in any, well, I only saw one of Mark Poloncarz's ads, and he was in it. But I haven't really heard any other Democrats talking about the county election. Have you?
Talking about what?
The county election for the county exec.
Well, you know, it's been real quiet. It's been, you know, Ray Walter, you know, he's viable, but he's not known in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And so Buffalo's going to be real low because from people's perspective, I mean, Poloncarz would probably get about 90% of votes just being voted in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the enthusiasm is in Cheektowaga. I know the supervisor of Cheektowaga, she can win the primary. She didn't have Republican opponents, so that's going to shut down a lot of people voting. So, yeah, and until something happened in the next couple of days, I think this might be one of the most lackluster elections that I have been privy to.
To be involved in.
Since I got here in 1970.
Wow.
Yeah, it just doesn't even feel like a general election.
Isn't that, you know, that's something kind of bad when people get to that point. I have one other thing to tell folks here. And that is, there's a free Bible study for those of you who are interested in that Bible study and religious things. It takes place on Wednesday evening from 6:30 to 7:30 at the Pratt Willard Community Center. And they're at 422 Pratt Street in Buffalo. And if you want more information about that, you can contact Mr. Floyd. And his number is 854-1574. We're winding down on our program this morning. And legislative, you certainly can.
Charlie Fisher and I have been charged with the unions to find viable candidates for their pre-apprenticeship training program.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the reasons they say they reduced the minority hiring goals because they couldn't find a credible or viable candidates for the pre-apprenticeship training program.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who want to get into a training program, we have spaces available in a lot of the union halls.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be, number one, high school graduate or have a GED.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you must have a driver's license or a way of transportation getting to the training sites.
Mm-hmm.
Three, they do an extensive background criminal search, so you you know, must have not too much in your criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
And four, which I think has caused a lot of people not to be able to finish these program, is you must be able to pass a drug test.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably going to need to pass a drug test.
It's so hurtful to me because I had a lot of people who are viable who I think are doing very well, but fortunately they start the recreational use of marijuana and they, you know, it's a lifestyle for them now. It's hard for them to quit, but they do recognize the fact, too, that they do hair samples now. You can't just pass a urine test, take you home free. They go into the hair, which can show drug use up to 6 months.
Oh, my goodness.
We're asking people to please, if you wanted to join, you know, call me or Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
My number is 650-8889. That's 650-8889. Or they call me, Betty Jane, at 602-5877. But I tell them, if you know you can't pass the test, you know, don't waste your time, mm-hmm. don't waste the union time, and don't waste our time, because we try and get people
to do that. That's going to have to be our last word for this morning. And Betty Jean Grant has been our guest this morning. I'm glad we've had you. And when I get off the air and later on in the morning, I'm going to give you a call.
Okay, sounds good.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye.